This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
I often think too much. Get lost in my trace of thoughts so far. Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. That was just Pepina, who will be live in studio later today. First off, Chef Noberto Piattoni, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Hi, Greg. Thank you for having me.
Yes, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty well.
You got started cooking early on your grandfather's farm.
Yes, practically I started to learn about food production and cooking since early age with my grandfather. He was a really good cook and farmer, so I learned a lot of stuff.
What type of farm was it?
It was a general farm, produced chickens, some cows, and vegetables in general.
What would he cook for you, or what would he call from the farm to cook for dinner that you still carry with you to this day? What dish would be emblematic?
His best dish is make paellas with chicken.
Really?
Yeah, he learned how to do paella from some Spanish people who immigrate to Argentina in the north, in Corrientes, and then he will make the amazing paellas and all these classic dishes with tripe and beans and kind of old school cooking from Argentina.
What is the absolute secret for making a good paella or make your grandfather's paella?
Cure the pan very well, season it pretty well, and then just do it in an open fire. He always did it in the garden with a little fire underneath, and that was the secret, I think.
Was there a task that you had to work up to, like you couldn't stir the rice until you watched him make it 100 times, or you couldn't add that? What was the big benchmark for you?
Practically, yes, the rice. Get to the point where you have that crispy layer of rice in the bottom of the paella. That is the difficult part of make a paella, basically.
So simple, but so many times.
So many times you have to do it to get it right, because it's about timing, water, and...
The path to food was not totally obvious, though. You studied chemical engineering. How did you end up on that path, and how did you get back to food?
I like pretty much and enjoy studying mathematics, physics, and chemics to try to understand process. So when I finished high school, I was between cooking and between studying chemical engineer. Chemical engineering was something a little bit more interesting by then, also for my family. And then I decided to get into university school and study chemical engineer for 6 years. And then work for a year in a gelatin factory where we did gelatin from cow skin. After a year being there, I wasn't feeling in the right place.
not exactly as inspiring as grandfather's open fire paella.
No, completely not. So basically I decided just to move on and do what I really like to do, then is cook for people and seeing the feeling of people eating.
You mentioned that you like the study of process and physics. How did that factor into the type of cooking that you are doing and how you ended up working with Francis Maumann?
I think studying all that chemical engineer and all different process make you understand the process of cooking and also the process of prepping stuff for cooking. So basically, it's always systems, then we make everything work better. So basically, I think you adapt all that theory of how to speed up and how to make process faster to get to the point that you want.
Do you obsess over stop gaps? Do you try to find, you know, the bottleneck in the process and get that better and then get the other one?
Yeah, constantly kind of seeing what is the best way to do it.
So you, in 2005, Francis Maumann had you come cook at 1884. What was it like working with him? Where did you start to learn there? How did you begin to evolve as a chef under his tutelage?
Basically, I was lucky to get there from some friends who I was working in a little town in Mendoza in Argentina. I got in touch with Francis' team in Mendoza. I was invited to stash for a few months. And then working there, since I arrived first day, I was in charge of the grill of Parisha, the fire cooking. And I started to learn a lot of things about how to work a professional restaurant and professional kitchen and a whole team and about the service and data over there. Basically, a fine dining restaurant. And then I got invited to come to Uruguay to work with him for a summer. And after spending a few months over there, become the head chef and stay for 4 seasons.
Day one, Francis Maumann working the grill, did you feel absolutely confident or totally nervous?
I was feeling pretty confident. I have a lot of experience cooking with fire prior to start to work with him. Argentina is a place where you grow up, basically seeing your family, your grandfather, your friends, any large party format, somebody will be grilling something. Also, every Sunday you will be grilling meat with your family in your house. That is kind of classic. So basically you have experience. If you like cooking, you have all the experience cooking with fire. So it was a little bit more nervous about to get in there and to get involved with the process of the restaurant. Not so nervous about the cooking part.
Mm. What did you feel the biggest takeaway from working under him and for those four seasons outside of growing your cooking, your culinary skills? What were the things that he learned about running the restaurant that you carried with you from there?
It's just his philosophy of work and look for talented people. A lot of freedom to interpret what you can create. I take away a lot of professional work in the kitchen too. How to manage a kitchen, how to be a head chef. It was my first steps doing that over there. So I take a lot of experience working in large formats events too. Mm. And also perfection a little bit more all my skills in fire cooking, understand a little bit more process, from where come the techniques that he used all in back in the day with gauchos and tribes was living in Argentina, and how basically you can see the mix of that techniques with then the immigrants from Italy that came with regular kind of Italian grill techniques too.
What's a key mistake that people make when they're doing large formats when translating from cooking for four people to 400? What is it, an easy trip up that people don't tend to think about in their early execution?
I don't know. Probably the ordering of food, the amount of food.
They always under order.
Under order or too much, okay. You know, sometimes you get scared about how many people and you think, oh my God, it's like 1,000 people is going to eat this. I have to order so much food. And then in the end, you always order a little bit too much.
Like, we're going to need 4,000 chickens.
Yeah.
It's only 1,000 people. We're going to need 4,000 chickens.
Anyways, if you make numbers, say, yeah, 4,000, 400 chickens, 500 pounds of this and the other one, and then you put it all together and it's just...
So from there, you went to Paris, Kentucky to open an Argentine restaurant, but also equally, you ended up at Bar Tartine,
yes,
which ended up being super influential. Can you talk about your experience there, some of the things you took away from there? I know you worked a lot with National Fermentation as well.
So definitely Bar Tartini was a huge influence and a huge inspiration for me. To see a completely different way of cooking, preserving. I got in touch with preserving again with my grandfather. I remember him putting olives in salt water, let it there for a few months and then eat it. Then understand that it's just a lacto-fermented process. Then I wasn't able to understand before. So definitely in Bar Tartine, seeing all this process and all the process that they made in the house and cheese and see all the different ways and you can preserve food to a future use. I think that was the biggest influence that I took from there and opened all my cooking style and everything in kind of to appreciate and also think about safe vegetables and stuff. They are in season right now to a future use when you don't have stuff around.
Right, especially when you're pulling from the environment, how to stretch the ingredients, stretch the season, make sure that everything lasts a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like some fresh blueberries that were frozen and preserved in the winter that have a little taste of summer?
Yeah, completely. One of the things we did in the restaurant is just preserve some corn, serve it like a few months later, and people was like, how is possible you serve corn now? It's like, yeah, it was just preserved a few months before.
Mm. From there, you went to work some Mr. Chow pop-ups in Venice, which sounded pretty amazing, some open-air cooking. Can you describe the setting and what the dinners were like?
Yeah, so my good friend Max, who is Michael's son from Mr. Chow, we will just get together in Venice Beach, find this place in, it's called Riot, it's a news place. So basically, we did a setup in the garden. They have like a little backyard, and we create a menu. And we just cook over there, have some guests, make some really cool space in a warehouse, put some tables, And we played around. We tried to make paella once, and it wasn't that successful as we expect.
Your grandfather was just shaking his head.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
And then from there, before you opened Meta, you worked at Metrograph, designing the menu for there. For those people who don't know, Metrograph is this beautiful new theater that opened a couple years ago in New York. What type of thinking goes into the menu for what pairs well before seeing a movie? Or did you have to adjust the menu at all?
Basically, they came out with this idea of the commissary kitchen. Then it was in L.A. in a movie studio. They have this old classic menu with different influence, like French, Italian cuisine. And they kind of had the idea already of have that kind of style of menu. So just I helped them to develop that idea and get a more modern, a little bit of more accurate menu for the times that we live right now, and just put some ingredients, try to do it. But basically already they have the whole idea of the menu. They were just trying to copy that commissary kitchen that exists before in a movies.
We're going to take a quick musical break.
Yep.
And then we are going to come back and talk about Meta, your new restaurant in Fort Greene, which is super exciting. We're going to play a quick track from the archives, and then we'll be back here on Snacky Tunes.
It was something familiar, like the sound of the sea. I forgot I remembered, like some lost part of me. It was only a flicker. It was barely a trace, only there for a second, and then gone from your face. Reflections at sundown can make me so sad, for there's no way of keeping the day we've just had.
You met your partner, Henry Rich, in 2016. Henry owns Rucola, June Wine Bar, Fitzcarraldo, which is one of my favorite restaurants. So cool. Yeah. Such good food. How did the partnership come about? What was the concept that you came up together? How did Meta become into being?
So basically I met Henry cooking at Pioneer Works in Red Hook.
Love Dustin.
Okay. I was doing some pop-ups there. I cooked 2 years ago for first time in Pioneer Works. A really good friend of Gabe. So I did this pop-up, and Henry was there for that dinner. He's a really good friend of Gabe. So Gabe asked who was the guy who's cooking. He introduced us. And after that, we started to talk a little bit about restaurants, food. And he told me, hey, I have this corner in Fort Greene. Then I got, I think, in an open restaurant. I don't have the concept yet. I like the food that you do. So we started to talk about it. And we became with this idea together. The idea of the open fire kitchen definitely come from Argentina and from South America. And with his help, we was able to put this open kitchen in the restaurant. Then we had the people from Home Studio design it. And then it was just try to feed our restaurant in the neighborhood, and it looked pretty cool, beautiful, all those brownstone houses. And that's how we create, basically.
And it seems like a marriage between your preservation that you learned at Bar Tartine and then the work that you learned under Chef Malman and your Argentine, where it's preservation, open air, really interesting pairing of the two processes to make pretty unique food.
Yeah, and basically, if you go back, is the first techniques that people use it to cook. Just when electricity and fire, it wasn't available. Electricity and gas, it wasn't available. People, it was cooking with fire. I used preservation techniques to save products for dry aged meats, preserved vegetables, and all the stuff. So it's putting together two old techniques and create on a particular...
Very primal, very yeah. elemental.
Very elemental.
Well, and also it's interesting, you designed the kitchen yourself. It was a unique design. Can you talk a little bit about what you have installed in there and some of the contraptions that you're working with?
Yeah, so basically what I created there is a kind of classic elemental Argentine hearth where you have a fire basket where you burn the wood. What that basket give you is just hot coals after the wood is burned. And then when those hot coals drop down to the floor, you just move it around. And to your left, you have a classic parrilla or grill in Argentina where you put coals underneath and you use the radiant heat for cooking. To the right side, you have a flat top or plancha where you also move coals, put fire underneath, and burn stuff, cook flatbread, use it for different cooking styles. And then we have a whole structure where we hang chickens, pork butts, lamb legs, and basically we slow roasted the stuff for 6-7 hours. Then we cut in steaks and serve in the menu.
That sounds amazing. You also have a zero carbon footprint, which is super interesting, or a near approach to that.
Near approach to that. I don't believe that you can be zero.
Sure.
But you can be closer to, or do your best, definitely.
The food still gets delivered on trucks, and you have no idea for, you know, all those things. What is the approach to that, and how do you get close to zero carbon footprint? What in the kitchen, and the steps, and the processes that you have?
It's a long journey to get into the point that you don't produce any carbon. Footprint, but definitely working with local farmers and getting all local products helps a lot. Also have a whole program of recycling and compost and garbage. But basically, all what we use at Meta is East Coast, from the beef, the fish, the vegetables, the oils, the grains. We basically don't use... I would say we use Colatura d'Alici from Italy. Then it's one of like ingredients that we like a lot. But the oils that we use come from Vermont, the grains, the flours that we use come from everything from upstate, also the beef and everything. So I think trying to keep it as close as the restaurant possible in all the production and all the products that come from, that helps a lot.
One of the other things that is really good is the wine program that you have. It was developed by your partner.
Yes.
Can you talk about his approach? I know it's a lot of natural wines that pairs well with it, but what was he thinking as he was selecting the wines for the new concept?
Basically, like you say, he have this wine bar called June. They have this cult of like natural fermented wines. Definitely, when we start this project, have a lot of sense because we're using all this lacto-fermented and natural fermented process to for the menu, for the food, and having all these wines goes married pretty well with the food because they are both wild, they are all basic techniques. And
it seems in both the cooking and the wine, it's as little human interaction as possible. Just let the ingredients speak for itself. Let the wine speak for itself. You're just helping it along just enough to get it to a point where people can consume it, but just everything else is hands off.
Yeah, I think that is our ethos. That is how we like to, for people, and also we think it's one of the healthiest way to to eat, to drink, when they have less human intervention and more natural are the vegetables and everything.
And you also have a strong non-alcoholic program as well, which I always appreciate for the people who don't drink but still don't want to just have a soda or soda water. How did that develop, and how does that pair with the food?
Basically, I quit drinking over a year ago, so I introduced myself to different drinks, sodas, and also studying a little bit more about use of medicines like roots, ashwagandha, elecampanes, and all these root and plants that are pretty beneficial for your health. So for me, it was really important to have an option for people who doesn't drink, because I would like to go to a place where I have options if you don't drink. So we started to create the program for there with some friends from Grace. She owns a stand in the farmer's market called Fornach Creek Farm. She grows ashwagandha, elecampane, marshmallow roots, tulsi, borage, and a lot of wonderful herbs that are pretty healthy. So putting that things together, talking with her a little bit, and being worried about being healthy and not drinking, we create this soda program. Also, I'm serving there some rye kvass that is made for the guys from Enlightenment Wines and Honeys here in Bushwick. So basically, I'm serving some of the kvass and they are there too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Last thing, great playlist when you walk in. How do you curate the music for the restaurant? What are you going to think of? What pairs well with elemental cooking and natural wines?
Definitely, I bought a record player for the restaurant. We don't install it yet. So we just curating depends of the vibe, the day, the weekend. We have some people from the restaurant making playlists too, so we switch a little bit, depends of the vibe. Definitely some days we play. The last 2 days we was playing a lot of reggae and dub because it's summertime. Mm. It was chill. We have the windows open. Sometimes we play more like rock and roll or blues. So it depends the vibe that we have over there. I think as wild you go with music, better go with the wild food and wine.
Good enough. Well, Chef, thank you for coming by today. Where can people find information on the restaurant, find information about you, website, Instagram?
Website, Instagram, Meta, BK is the website. It's information about the menu. Our website is pretty primal, too. we try to keep it everything pretty primal. It's how we like it to do it. And then, yes, Instagram for the restaurant. I have an Instagram, don't use it anymore.
Fair enough. You're in the kitchen. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for coming by. We're going to take another quick musical break, play a track from the archives, and then we'll be back with Pepina live in studio here on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you. looking for an answer out in the sea and under your bed. Well, I'll probably just leave it till the morning. My energy is already spent.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. That was just Liam Finn. If you like that, check out our archives on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure to subscribe. And if you're over there, please make sure to leave us a review and a rating. We would really appreciate it. Pepina.
Hey.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Happy release week.
Yeah, thank you. It's very exciting.
We're going to get to that in a second. But first, you grew up in Helsinki.
Yes, Helsinki, Finland.
Trained as a classical...
Flutist. Yes.
How long were you able to sustain that before you told your parents, I gotta change the instrument?
They kind of knew. I started playing the flute when I was 7, but then I got my first piano when I was 10. And they really saw the difference of me playing contemporary music and me playing classical music. It was really, I was just playing to please my teacher when I played the flute. And when I played the piano, it was just for myself.
Very alive.
Yeah.
Were you a good student, though?
I was a very good student, and my teacher was a very good teacher in a way that every time if I would learn something, we would just right away move into a new thing. Like, I always felt like... I never felt like I was a good flutist because we never stayed where I was comfortable. Mm. But that also meant that I learned really quickly and I got really good, but it also kind of took a lot of the joy away from it, so...
You couldn't just have a good week. You couldn't be like, oh, I crushed this.
Yeah.
I'm just going to play this for a week and then come in and like, nope, on to the next thing.
It was
You're
right
an absolute
away.
Failure all the time at everything.
That's how I felt for like 10 years. And then on the very last year when I was more into like making music and I was kind of realizing that, hey, like maybe I could use flute in my music. And it was the first time that I looked at it differently. And I kind of realized that, wow, like... I'm a decent player, but I realized it too late, and I'm still not playing flute at my shows. One day I will, though.
Really? It hasn't made it back?
It hasn't made it back. I still hear my teacher's voice in the back of my head, like, there's only one way to play it, and it's the right or the wrong way, you know, like, and if it's anything in between, it's wrong.
Is that true about the flute, that there's only one way to play it?
No, it's not. There's no one way to play any instrument, but it's just the world of classical music. You have to learn how to recreate something that's already done. So in that way, yeah, there is only one way to recreate something. But yeah, I'm definitely going to bring it back.
One day.
Yeah, one
like
day.
Like two EPs from now, yes. It's going to be all flute.
All flute.
All flute. And you heard it here first. That's
yes.
a promise.
It's a promise.
You moved over to the piano. When did you start writing songs for yourself?
Around that time. So, well, actually, there is proof that I was writing songs before that. My mom actually has this little tiny piece of paper from when I was 6 years old, and I wrote down like a melody. And I was like, Mom, I wrote a song. And she still has that little piece of paper. So it's been just always a part of what I do is creating melodies. But when I got my piano at the age of 10, it was suddenly not just melodies. It was harmonies. It was like this whole world that you could just create. And I wouldn't really learn how to play songs. I was just listening to what I was playing and basically just started writing instrumental music right away.
When did you feel that you wrote your first good song?
Oh, I don't know about that. Good is such a relative term because I actually do remember one of the first songs that I wrote. I think I was 11 or something, and it was just a really simple piano piece. And I still revisit it. I think that was a good song.
First one out the gate.
Well, it wasn't the first one, but it was definitely like one of the first. And I think it's all relative. Like, if I would write that today, I would think that, oh, like, it's boring, it's not complex enough, oh, it doesn't have these and this and that. But because I was 11 when I wrote it, like, that was really good for an 11-year-old.
When did you start to develop the style that you consider what you're playing now? How many years did that take?
Oh, well, I'm still in development, 100%. I hope that I'm gonna keep on developing my style till the end. I would never want to find this is what I'm gonna do now. But this specific thing, I would say that it started when I first came to New York 3 years ago, and I made my first EP. And that was the first time I was really introduced to how the music industry really works, like outside of your bedroom and how, you know, music...
Outside of Helsinki.
Exactly. And how, like, music is actually produced and what goes into it and, you know, how pop music is written. Like, of course, there's no one way to write something, but I just learned a lot. And I think, you know, ever since then, I've been just learning. And I'm really excited about this new release because it definitely is a step to the right direction. I just want to keep going to that direction.
Can we hear a song?
Yes, you can.
What are you going to play for us first?
We're going to play a song from the EP. It's called Against the Grain.
Was a girl next door back then. She didn't know how to fit in, and everyone kept telling her, don't talk back, don't ask us why, just sit down quietly and smile. Better to be seen than heard. Is that what it means to be a good girl? Everywhere loves to feel adrenaline. Let no one get in your way. You can be the hero, the heroine. Never back down, don't refrain. You have to do just to stay and make it your kind of day. Surrender to the stories in your mind. You'll never know what you may find. Never listen when they call you in. Say, just get out there. Yeah.
You've been dubbed the Queen of Sundance.
Yes.
How does one apparently get that title?
I don't know how official that title is, but
I see you brought your crown.
Yes. No, I've performed there 4 times now. I think that might add to it, just the quantity of performances. It really, Sundance has played a big role in my whole career as a musician.
How did you get involved with them? It's not always so well known for music. I know there are showcases for licensing and for that, but obviously it's known for film. How did you end up there 4 years ago? What is the setting for your performances, and how has it really influenced your career?
Yeah, so actually the first time I performed there, it was because my whole career started out of uploading music online to this platform called Hit Record. And they started a TV show called Hit Record on TV that was premiering at Sundance that year. And I had been basically just uploading music online from my bedroom, not really thinking too much of it. And yeah, the site was founded by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And then he just calls me up and says that, hey, we want you to come to perform.
Classic, yeah, JGL just, phone call.
Exactly, yeah. It just happens. That's the way to do it. Like, that's my tip to everybody. Just get that phone call. No, but
and then you're fine.
And then you're fine.
Yeah, then you're fine. Yeah,
then it's done. That's
did you get
it.
The call? Get the call. Then you're fine.
Exactly. But yeah, he called me up, and I flew to Sundance to perform at the premiere party because it was premiering there, and that's really what I was there just for 2 nights. It was a crazy trip. I performed just 1 song on a piano, and my now manager and lawyer, Stephen Beer, happened to be in the audience and just gave me his card and said that, hey, like, I like what you're doing. Let's see if we can collaborate. And then we just started talking over email and we Skyped, and he said that, you know, if you want, I can help you, you know, network in New York. I can help you, you know, set you up with a team, and we can make your first EP here if that's what you want. So that was really just the first step that brought me to US, New York specifically. And yeah, and then the year after that, Steven is also hosting a New York lounge at the Sundance Film Festival. So I came there and I was performing just 5 nights in a row at his event. And this one person, Mori Lvovits, happened to be in the audience, who later on became my sponsor, who later on became the founder and owner of my now label, Honey Rose Records. And then the year after that, I was there again. And this time, that was the craziest one. I was the first person ever to open for the new music venue, Basecamp. I was performing at multiple venues there and parties. And yeah, with Sundance, because it all happens in such a small space, it's like you just never know who you're going to meet there. Mm. It's really friendly and really great. And I've always just met the really key people to my career there.
The interesting thing about Honey Rose Records, which is your label, is that it is from Park City, and it is
all
about getting artists who play Park City or Sundance and getting them on a record label, which is such a unique response to all the musicians that come to town during that time.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Sundance and Park City, it's just, it has a very specific vibe. It's just so welcoming, and you really don't know, like, whoever could be walking, you know, on the street, whoever could come to your show. And it's like the audiences are not big in numbers, but they're like big in who is there.
Yes. It's quality, not quantity.
Yes.
Can we hear another song?
Yes, for sure.
What are you going to play for us?
This one is called What Does It Take, also from the EP. What does it take for us to see our way across the line? What does it take to make it clear we don't know how to turn back time? What can I say? You keep on feeding me the same old lies. What does it take for you to stop pretending that your hands are tied? You say that we are done, that it's already gone, but I need to know if I'm the only one, if I'm the only one who says it can be so. Oh.
New EP out this yes. past Friday. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What was the process into this record? It's very evolved sound. It's yes. a lot of growth from the last one. What changed from the previous EPs upon making this one?
So one big thing that changed that was that I actually knew what I was getting into. Because I had never, because I had never produced or like been a part of producing anything before. When I was making my first EP, I had just written songs in my bedroom and then recorded them like guitar vocals. So I didn't really know what it meant to build a production. But getting into this one, I was really heavily involved. Like every, and we really layered it out. Like I was working with the producer, Charles Newman, and we really laid it out like one layer by layer, like went through like the melodies and the, you know, sounds together, and I really was able to leave my mark to it, like, all the way through. Another thing was that this time I was maybe less trying to please everyone. Like, you know, with the first record, by the way, I'm really proud of that record, and I love it. But with the lyrics of it, I was kind of, like, softer on the edges. Like, I had messages, but I was trying to put them through in a way that everybody would approve and everybody would be happy with. And I'm still not like doing anything too revolutionary. Like I'm not upsetting anybody, but I really had strong visions of what I want to tell people. And I wasn't thinking too much of like the way of saying it. So it was all much clearer in my head.
What's one of the messages that you really feel came across in this EP?
I think it's one of the big ones. It's like just dare to be strong and dare to be powerful and like find that strength in you. And being strong and being powerful doesn't mean that you have to like shout it out or like be just a jerk about it. Like being strong is also being able to show that you're weak and just kind of like the different sides of being strong. And it's just so important to me, especially knowing that my audience is probably more on the younger side, probably more, you know, speaks to a lot of women, and I just always think, like, what would I want to tell myself when I was 13, or what would I want to tell my 10-year-old cousin? Like, what are the things that I really want them to know? And one thing is that you can be strong and you can be loud and you can do whatever you want.
Also, give up the flute, take up the piano.
Yes. No, the flute was really good, and you're going to be really, really happy one day that you did take those 11 years of learning it.
One of the coolest songs or inspirations, Against the Grain, is about female comic book writers.
Yes.
Which is really awesome.
No, I saw this amazing documentary called She Makes Comics. And I kind of knew that they were looking for, you know, ending title song. And I was just so inspired. It was just this, I love comics. I love that whole world. Like, I'm...
What do you read?
I know all these names in Finnish, so...
That's fine, call it out.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I like Lassi and Levi, which is like the little boy and the tiger toy, I don't know. And,
oh, Calvin and Hobbes.
Yes, Calvin and Hobbes.
Okay, I can translate for you.
Yes. yeah, I loved comics. And I did, like, growing up, in my family, I never felt that it was, like, was not a girl thing to do. But I did feel really awkward entering a comic store or, you know, just, like, talking about it to anyone other than my brother. Because it did feel like I don't know about it enough that it's okay to like it. Mm-hmm.
And you also, do you draw as well?
I do, yeah.
And what type of drawings do you do, and how does that tie into it?
Oh, well, it 100% ties into it. I actually, like, drawing has always been one of my big passions. I also read manga a lot as a teenager, as a lot of us do. And I drew that for a while, and then I just kind of turned more into the... Exactly like Calvin and Hobbes type of like comic strip type of drawing, where you can just kind of like exaggerate certain parts of the body to like express the emotion that you want. I really love that kind of really simplistic drawing. Yeah, I love that.
Well, we want to make sure we have time for one more song. Where can people find the EP, find out where you're playing? Do you have any upcoming... I know you had the release party this past weekend, but any future coming upcoming shows?
We don't have any dates confirmed yet, but you should definitely go to my website, pepinamusic.com, to find out any future dates. And the EP Spark is available on iTunes and Spotify and Google Play and Amazon and wherever you... pick your poison, like whichever you want to consume.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Big shout out to Chef Piattoni for coming by. Make sure to check out Meta. We are going to be off next week because David the Engineer says no shows on July 4th weekend. So we will never. But we'll be back in a couple weeks, and we'll be doing a whole new episode of Snacky Tunes. What's the name of the song you're going to take us out with?
I'm going to take us out with Fire.
Perfect. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
It's not that easy to be one of us. But speaking up seems so dangerous. You shut it down, you shut the body fighting through the mess that's in your head, all in your head. Breathe, let go and trust your feet. Run, just run. Solid ground. Ain't that something to be proud about? I've got my lungs, I've got my sound. So hear me scream, hear me shout. The pain is loud, but the fight is
just run. Fire, fire the gun. Breathe, let go and trust your feet. Run, just run. Fire, fire the gun. Fire the gun.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.